Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja.
This is Cashflow Ninja. My name is MC Lobsher. Thank you so much again for spending your most valuable resource, your time with me on another episode of Cashflow Ninja. All of our resources, tools, and community information can be found at cashflowninja.com, along with over 750 other episodes between Cashflow Ninja and Cashflow Investing Secrets. And also, just a reminder that our educational platform is live. Our programs are live. We've got two programs already, which the program members have found very helpful. The one is the Cashflow Core Builder. You can check that out at cashflowninja.com/core, C-O-R-E. And the other one is the Crypto Investing Method. You could check that out at cashflowninja.com/crypto. I'm super excited to have a fantastic guest joining me, Brian Beers. Brian's a very impressive individual. Got to know him pretty well. He's a great guy, and I've been pretty excited waiting for our chat today. He's buying a ton of businesses, and I am ready to learn from him, and I know my audience is going to love this episode. So, Brian, thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, so big fan of your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So for folks that are not familiar with you and what you do, could you please share a little bit about your journey and background with them?
Yeah, sure. So I am 33 years old. I live in the Philadelphia area, not too far from you. I have a beautiful wife. We've been together since high school, and we have two girls. One is 4 and a half, and the other is now 8 weeks old. And so that's been been amazing. In the work, I have kind of three titles. I'm an entrepreneur, a business coach, and a podcaster. And so as an entrepreneur, I joined my family's business in 2010 after college. University of Miami, spent a couple of years in Florida, enjoyed that. Yeah. And came back up, and it was like right after 08, 09, we had a business in the automotive repair Midas franchises here in the Philadelphia area. My dad and uncle had been in it since the 70s, and they were tired and it'd been rough a couple of years. So they were thinking about selling the business, keeping the real estate, what they owned. And then, I joined. I knew nothing about cars. I think I like changed a tire once in my life. But, I knew business. I knew people. So I learned, from the ground up. And then 2016, we started growing. We started acquiring other franchises, existing, Midas shops in the Philadelphia area. And now we have 20 between Philadelphia and New Jersey. And continuing to grow that. So that's kind of our primary business. As a business coach, I work one-on-one with other, high-performing entrepreneurs who want to help grow their business. We work on mindset, kind of questioning the status quo, getting clarity, what to focus on, kind of all the things that I, work with myself on and have learned. And then I have a podcast. It's called Business with Beers. And I bring on a range of guests to educate and inspire listeners. I've got a lot of inspiration from you and what you do. And, I'm kind of doing my, own version to learn from others and share that knowledge and kind of grow the community. So that's, my 2-minute overview.
Awesome. No, I had a lot of fun on your show too, talking about business. So let's talk a little bit about buying businesses. Because right now there are many different trends, and maybe you can touch on them, provide a fantastic opportunity for people to buy businesses, but there's a lot of things that go into it, of why you should look at businesses to buy. I just look at some of the trends, and here's just some things that I'm seeing. Is number one is the massive demographic trend. There are a lot of folks that started businesses. I mean, we have over 70 million baby boomers, and their exit for retirement is a one-trick pony selling their business, right, which they've built up throughout the year. So that you've got that going on. You had a massive shakeup in 2020, and a lot of folks might have been a little bit intimidated or just said, you know what, I'm ready to sell. I'm not ready to rebuild anything or continue this on because of all the challenges that some folks are continued to see. And then you've got a lot of very low interest rates that are out there. So there's a lot of money available, but there's also strategic ways to bring in seller financing, which folks would be might be now more open than to it than what they were. But those are just some of the things that I have seen. If you can expand on that maybe, and some of the trends that you're seeing and why now is such a great time to buy businesses.
Yep, sure. Yeah, you hit on at least almost all the ones that I'm seeing and the ones that we're buying is, you know, number one, age. You know, every single deal that we've done has been from a seller who is in their 60s and they're looking at retirement and, you know, the stress of running a business, especially in our business service base, lots of employees, like it's not easy by any means. And so, you know, it's they're ready to have an easier, simpler life. And so that's huge. Number one. And then there's dealing with employees now is specifically, it's very hard to find people. And so, you know, they got this stress and then it's getting a little bit better, but it's yep. hard to hire good people with all the free government money. So, you know, someone just, they're just tired of dealing with it. And then there's also trends, right? In our space, automotive repair, right? It's changing. It's going to change even more into the future with electric cars and all these things. And so, you know, they may not be ready or want to take those big macro changes with them as the business model shifts. And so for us, at least, that's been kind of, you know, an advantage to us because we're, you know, we got better systems to hire people. You know, we're ready for these trends. We kind of know what's going to happen and we're trying to lay the groundwork now. And, you know, a lot of them will see me and think, you know, I was them a number of years ago. And, you know, then they, you know, you start this relationship. So, you know, when we're looking at it, and I think, you know, this is how I look at it, and a lot of this can apply to anybody in any type of business. You know, we just happen to be in, you know, franchised automotive. But, you know, number one, what's the goal when buying the business, right? Are, you know, if it's your first business and you got another, you know, W-2 job, maybe you're just looking to replace your current income, right? And that could be a goal. Are you looking to grow and it's an investment on a return of capital, right? So for us, you know, that's a big one that we look at is, all right, we got extra money that we've made. Well, you know, how do we grow it, right? We can do real estate. We can put it into whole life cash flowing policies with yourself. Or we could put it back into the business. We can buy additional locations. We can buy equipment, right? And so that's a big one for us. You know, how does it align? How does buying this business align with this future that you're trying to create? You know, I'm big on, you know, what's our like 3-year, you know, vivid vision. If you follow that, you know, Cameron Herold and his you know, his message. You know, and for us, you know, my vision is that we have this company that can run completely without my personal like day-to-day involvement in the business. You know, and that I'm hitting all the 5 freedoms, you know, Tony Robbins, it's touches on, it's, you know, we have time freedom, money freedom, geographical freedom, relationship freedom, and, you know, contribution freedom. And so, you know, for me, a bigger company means we got more people involved, right? There's more layers, there's more systems. And then, you know, my personal involvement and having to make a decision on an operational day-to-day basis should, you know, it shouldn't be relying on me, right? Sometimes when you have a smaller business, you know, as the owner, you wear all these different hats. And so then you have to get involved. And, you know, for me to have that freedom that I really want to, you know, travel wherever we want to go, spend time with whoever we want to spend it on, you know, contribute and give back, you know, obviously you need money to do all that. And, you know, the business is how we get there. And then the final one is how does it align with your current footprint, at least in our business, that's retail and physical based. Right. If I can buy a shop that's within our current footprint in Philadelphia or, you know, now North Jersey, you know, I'm probably willing to pay more for that location than one that's like two hours away and it's a satellite store in terms of, you know, we're going to transfer employees or leveraging vendors or just the oversight and just, you know, the presence. So those are kind of the things that I look at when we're analyzing, does this make sense or how do we want to grow?
Yeah, it's important beforehand to establish all of this, right? Because there's a lot of folks that jump into the entrepreneurial arena and business for themselves. And before they know it, because they weren't clear on why they're buying a business, what they wanted to do for them, and how this would affect their life and their vivid vision, as you mentioned, the Cameron Herold sort of approach, They end up creating a prison for themselves.
Yep. They find themselves a job.
From which they were escaping from.
Yep. And it's even worse. They have more hours and less money and more headaches. And they're personally guaranteed, you know, on all their, everything they buy and take that they take on. So it's important they have that vision and that, you know, you're setting with this bigger thing in mind. And sometimes it's hard to do, but I think that's, at least for me, that's, you know, we want to keep that top of mind, those goals.
Yeah, absolutely. So, valuation, when you're going out and you're looking for companies to buy, what constitutes a deal? How do you evaluate businesses right now? Because we've seen a little bit of a shakeup too. So things aren't necessarily at the same valuations that they were, let's just say 18 months ago. So how, what's your approach?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So it's always looking at a multiple of the cash flow to the owner, right? So if the owner, you get the P&Ls, if the owner's taking a salary out of that, you know, we'll add that back to the profit. If he has any other fringe benefits, a car, you know, the wife's on payroll, whatever it is, you know, add that back. We figure out what the owner cash flow is, and then it's a multiple of that. You know, on average, let's say it's 2.5 times, you know, most small businesses, I think, are at least in the similar range, 2.5 to 3. I've paid as little as like one times, maybe a little bit less. And I paid more than that. I paid 3.5 times on a deal. And so, you know, that's the first factor is what's the owner. So if it's $100,000 a year, in owner benefit, you know, it's going to be 250 to 300. Let's say that's what that's worth, like, at least as a top level. And then we kind of go through this analysis. The next thing we look at is how much is that owner involved, right? So if that owner is like the key person at a shop, he's there every single day, he sells a job, he runs the stores, everybody who comes in, they ask for him, right? Like, the success of that store is highly dependent on that person who happens to be the owner. And so, like, we put somebody else in there, they're not gonna be as good as the guy who owns it, at least I would hope not. And so, right, so that's kind of devalues in our mind. And I think a lot of, you know, other businesses too, like, how involved is the owner? And so if you run a business, right, you want to not be a cog in any of those wheels. You want to be replaceable in a sense. And so we look at that, how involved. So if it's he has a team and he like is at home all day, right? That's more. If he's remote, like lives in another city, then that's even better, right? Because that means the store and the business is a lot more self-sufficient, which fits in kind of with our model. We look at what's the marketing, how does the operations, what's the staffing look like? If we see that, you know, they're not staffed, they don't have any marketing, the operations in terms of how they, you know, the training, like how do they answer phone calls? What's the workflow throughout the business? If we think all those things are poor to a degree, at least to our, what we look at, right, that's better for us. So we think, all right, this is a good opportunity. They don't do any marketing. They have no staff. Like, we staff the place, we train them, we advertise, you know, we know we have a proven kind of track record that those things will lead to results. We look at then how much capital do we have to put in, right? We have, once again, our model, at least. The nice thing about Midas is, you know, we have a national brand in terms of a name and a website and a marketing platform. But at the end of the day, each franchise group runs it kind of how they want to run it. So it gives us the flexibility to run it. You know, we're Prenlin Automotive Group, you know, we run it kind of our way. And if anything, we're more the model for other people to kind of follow versus, you know, other systems. You know, you're for Chick-fil-A or something, everyone's doing it the same exact way. And that's how they can create that consistency. Ours, being a service based, it's a little bit different, but gives us flexibility too. So we look at capital investments. So we have our model in my company of what equipment we want, the layout, the waiting room, the look, the feel. So how much do we have to invest there? Look at the historical performance. And then we look at cash on cash returns. So how much, so we take that 100,000, how much debt are we going to have, payments? And then what do we think we can get it up to? And, you know, our goal, when we've had track record of this, is 100% year one. So if I'm putting, you know, that $250,000 business, I put, I don't know, $50,000 down, you know, we should expect to get all $50,000 back in that first year, giving us 100%, you know, return on our capital. So at that point, we don't have any money in the deal in theory. And then each year it's continuing to, you know, hopefully give at least 50,000, maybe more, you know, as we grow the business. So that's kind of at least how we evaluate it. We start with the owner, multiple, and then, you know, kind of in our mind, but some on paper, you know, we add and subtract based on what we think the opportunity is of the location.
And then you determine how much value you can add to it through leveraging, like, as you said, your systems, your processes, and then your vendors, right? That's the nice thing about growing and scaling your business is you get better deals from existing vendors because they now have more stores that they can service of yours, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's a factor, not a huge factor. It's more about staff. In ours, it's a pretty simple. It's you got to have staff, right? You got to have people. Like these days, I mean, and obviously it's crazy with, you know, COVID and whatever government money, but you go to a restaurant and they have all these open seats, but then they tell you like they have no staff, they have no cooks, and it's going to be hours. And it's like, right, the restaurant has a lot more capacity than staff they have. And in our, you know, sometimes with us, it's similar where, you know, we just don't have enough guys and the phone's ringing, people want to come in. And it's just, you know, we got to get the stores staffed with some, you know, great people. So
it's nuts.
So that's usually what it is. It's we get the right people. Yep. We train them. You know, we're big on you know, traction. I don't know if you've read that with Gina.
Oh, yeah.
And, Gina, and EOS, right? And it's about having like the right people in the right seats. So you have the right people by defining your core values. And so that's what we look for. We our core values are integrity. They always do the right thing. Drive. They're driven to win, to succeed. Yeah, and they are, you know, leaders. They you know, speak up. They help each other, and so and they're accountable. And that they do what they say they're going to do. So you know, we're looking for people who have those qualities in the right seats. So like, are they in the right role? And yep. You know, whether that's a certain level of a technician or a manager or assistant manager. And so what we find is, you know, as long as we can find the right people through those core values, we put them in the right seats, then, you know, that's the recipe for success.
Awesome. What strategies right now are you looking at or exploring, just staying on that topic of employees for a second? Because there's a lot of folks that are in your exact same situation. I talk to a lot of people and it's so hard to hire people right now. I'll give you a funny example. So I took my children, went to a theme park. This is about a week, 2 weeks ago, and Diggerland, you know, up on here. So we went to Diggerland. Yep, and sure. one of the employees there was working the ride that we're on, stopped, ran to the other ride, worked that ride. I mean, it was literally, and I kind of like, you know, I was making conversation with him and said, man, you've a rough day. A lot of people must have called in sick. Kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And he was like, no, we can't find anyone to work. So there's a lot of folks in that same situation. So what are some things that I mean, strategies to find the perfect people and still get those right people? Because we are living in a crazy environment. I mean, talk about an Atlas shrug, kind of like kind of environment.
I have no secret sauce. I can tell you we spend a ton of money on Indeed and now Facebook, like thousands of dollars a month. To you have to bid it up, you know. So for auto mechanic Philadelphia, they want us to spend like $80 a day to get like 10 applications. Like it's crazy. So a couple things. One is we last couple months we've been building a brand on Facebook, and so one of our ideas was, you know, the best employees are the ones who like are currently working somewhere else, right? And maybe they're not treated right and they want more opportunity and career growth. Yep. And so we fit, all right, those guys, hopefully they're like at this other shop, it's slow, they're on their phone, they're scrolling through Facebook, right? And then we want one of our sponsored ads to come up. So we hired a virtual assistant and we got all of our guys in the shops to start taking pictures just of, you know, the environment, of cars, of whatever, just to show what the culture's like. And then, you know, she's posting to Instagram, Facebook. And so now we're doing targeted ads through Facebook jobs, and then just sponsoring just other posts. And I've hired a number of people that way, probably four or five now in the last 4 weeks. And so that's been pretty good. And, you know, I think the big one is organization of all these applicants. We advertise on different platforms, right? You put stuff on Craigslist, you put stuff on Indeed, we put stuff through Facebook. Yep. We use this thing called ClickUp. It's like a Asana or, you know, project manager software. It can be 100% customized. And so we have like an applicant tracker system that we built through this system. It's pretty easy, but basically anybody who applies, we start them as a prospect, and then we put them through these different stages. And then the various people involved can comment and say left voicemail, texted, set up interview, because we have multiple people. We have district. We don't have somebody who feeds in the applications. We'll have a district manager who might do a call. We might have a store manager who's involved. And so with different people, you need a really good system to keep it all organized. And prior to this, it was like, you know, a guy printing out resumes, making hand notes, which is good if it's one person. We get multiple people involved. And then some of these guys, like, they don't pick up their phone, the applicants, they don't pick up their phone. You got to like call them, text them, email them just to get a response. And so having a good system to track all that is key. And then once you get them on the phone and you get to talk to them and you tell them about what we can offer, you know, it goes better, but it's just that initial contact is sometimes hard. And I'd say speed, like somebody applies, getting them on the phone ASAP, don't wait a day or two, like hours. You want to talk to them. So
that's good stuff. So let's get back onto the business buying, but that's a very important part because,
You got to have employees.
You got to have employees when you buy a business. But you talk about four ways to buying a business. Now, after you've done the evaluation, you've come up with sort of a number. What are some strategies there you can share with us?
Sure. So number one, simplest, easiest, cash, right? So, you know, in this case, we've done these deals where somebody was very motivated, had a quite urgent need to get out. In this case, it was somebody who's moving to another state because their spouse got a very good job. And it was just like, I want to move. I don't want to deal with this. And so generally a lower price, you know, that one we paid 1x what the business made and just cash deal. And that was it. Like super simple, easy. Number two is bank financing, right? So super traditional to say, hey, you're going to either go conventional or get an SBA backed loan, which, you know, with the SBA, it's good in a sense, you know, it's 10% down all in on all your costs, but you know, it's a lot of work. They're going to want to tax returns from the seller. You're going to have, certain, you know, debt coverage ratios. They're going to want to make sure that the business can support it. They're going to want, inventory and assets are discounted to value. Right. And so then you need to put up additional collateral. Like, you know, obviously you have to personally guarantee, you might have to put up your personal house or other real estate. And, you know, you get some good terms. You could amortize it over 10 years and get you better cash flow. But, you know, it's a lot more upfront work. And so sometimes when you have a business, and we did one this way, and it, you know, it all worked out. But sometimes you have a business that maybe doesn't, it's not profitable. And so you're not going to have the debt coverage ratios. So the bank's just not going to finance it. So you have to go cash or you have to find another way. And so great for a lot of cases, but like both the seller and the buyer have to be willing to go through all these steps. So that's number two. Number three, this is kind of a little bit more of an interesting one, but it's like taking over a lease. And so we had one, it was a competitor who we had learned through hiring some employees that they're closing the location. And so, cause we asked him why he was looking for a job. He said they're closing the shop. And so, that one, we kind of went to the landlord, got a lease, and then we went to the operator and were able to just buy the assets for like 30 grand. And we bought this turnkey shop and, you know, the landlord, we negotiate 3 months of no rent. And, you know, so we're into this thing for, you know, $30,000, which kind of like a cash deal, but a lot cheaper than we didn't buy a customer list. We didn't buy cash flow. We just bought the assets, but, you know, we kind of know that, you know, we have a brand, you know, we open up, we advertise, you know, people are going to come to us. And so, that's an interesting way in a specific way, if you're looking to, buy something. And the last one, my favorite, seller financing. So this is where the seller becomes the bank and you make your principal and interest payments to the seller instead of to, you know, the bank. And in this way, everything is negotiable. Right. So it's a deal between you and them. And so you can, whatever the interest rate is, the term, the amortization, if there's balloon payments, if you have like a tiered structure, so you build it up, anything that makes sense for you and it makes sense for them, you can negotiate. And so that's my favorite. And I'm, you know, I can kind of, we can dive into that a little bit more.
Yeah, let's do that, because I'm pretty excited to learn more about that and some stuff you can share on that, because that really right now is a way that a lot of folks can buy businesses that they want to buy, because everybody is willing to negotiate now. Yep. Obviously, there's a lot of advantages for the seller, right? Taxes, spreading out taxes, capital yep. gains taxes, and so forth. But yeah, anything you could share about that,
yeah.
that
would be awesome. Yeah, so why would a seller do that, right? So, you know, why would they extend credit, that become the bank, right, to me, instead of just getting a check and being on their way? So, you know, couple different ways. One, it's unprofitable. So the business does not make any money. There's zero cash flow, right? Maybe it's not negative, but it's zero. And so in our case, and the one that we bought that was like this, you know, we didn't want to pay cash because, you know, it was like at current levels, a 0% return on your money. And we don't want to go to the bank. And so, you know, he financed it. So we gave him money down and then principal and interest every year, right? And so that's one way. Another way is they want a premium. So, right. So someone wants a higher price than what we think we can get it financed through a bank. So another deal we've done recently is, you know, 2020, obviously COVID was pretty bad for a lot of businesses. And so for this one, what we did is, you know, we kind of looked at like a 3-year average or a 2-year average, 2019, 2020, kind of what the cash flow was between those 2 years. And we kind of picked a number in the middle. And so then we applied our, you know, 2.5 times or whatever it was. And now granted, it was kind of a higher multiple than it was just 2020. It was a lower multiple than it was just 2019. But, you know, in our mind, 2019 was kind of more like what it's going to be, you know, versus the exception there. And so, but once again, we take that to a bank. Bank's not going to care about that. They're going to look at kind of what the current cash flow is and less the opportunity. And so from the seller standpoint, you want to sell your business, you finance it, right? As long as you think the guy can make the payments based on whatever the price is, you can get a higher price than if it has to get underwritten by the bank, who's going to question all that. Number three, they want cash flow, right? So as a business, as owning a business, right, you're used to kind of this consistent monthly cash flow, and perhaps they want that to continue. And so you get them the down payment, and then every month they're getting principal and interest payments. They can earn additional interest income, right? Instead of paying that bank the income, they're going to pay the seller that income. And then, like you said, they can defer taxes. So they get to spread it out. So if they have $100,000 in capital gains, the taxes that they owe, let's say, and they only get 8% of that the first year, they're only paying 8% of that 100,000. And so when we look at the math, the interest income that they're getting from the buyer is covering their taxable liability. And so basically, in essence, the interest income that they earn is then pays their taxes, you know, spread out over, you know, a number of years. And so that's a big one. And it's easy. It's generally quicker without the bank. So you're trying to get a deal done on a certain timeline through whatever methods, it's a lot quicker. And so, you know, we've worked with a number of sellers who just weren't aware that they could, this was a possibility, right? And so they're actually usually interested in this concept when you can kind of go through those things, consistent cash flow, additional income, deferred taxes. You know, there's it usually piques some interest, and then it's, you know, how does that work? You know, and you kind of, then you walk it through, and obviously you get attorneys involved. You have the same exact documents that you would going through the bank, right? We have a purchase agreement. We have a note, which just talks about how we're going to pay them back. We have a security agreement, which we are still personally guaranteeing and the business is guaranteeing. And so it's actually all the same exact documents. It's just then the terms of it are then what's more flexible, which, you know, we can kind of dive into now if
yeah, because I was going to say it's funny that people are always so fixated on the price, but what's more important than the price is the terms, right? So if you want to dive into that a little bit, because there's a huge opportunity there.
Yeah. So our strategy is, you know, we try to keep it simple to start, right? And it's kind of about knowing your audience, like who you're talking to, right? But if in the beginning you're offering, you got price and you're talking about interest rates and amortization and terms and like you got all these different factors, but to the seller at the end of the day, like we talk in terms of what they're going to receive. So I don't know, we're going to give you $50,000 down and $2,500 a month for 100 months, right? So you do the math real quick, 2,500, 100 months plus a down payment, you're 300,000.
Yep.
Right. So then, but that's principal and interest, right? And then you just got to back into, once you agree on the payment, so $50,000, 2,500 a month, 100 months, right? Then you can, you're good on that. Then it's a matter of, okay, what's the purchase price? It's, I don't know, 225. And what's the interest rate? It's 6%. And, you know, then you can play with those numbers. But we found, at least for us, that's an easier conversation to have in terms of what's a down payment, monthly payment, and number of months, those three things. Because then, you know, they may go back and say, well, hey, I need $4,000 a month, right? And so we say, okay, we can do $4,000, but we're going to only give you $25,000 down, and it's going to be for X months, right? And you can kind of just play with those three numbers. And then once you're all agreed, then you can back into, you know, what's the interest rate, and then what's ultimately the purchase price based on those factors. You know, and the interest rates, once again, like it's somewhat negotiable, but if you're negotiating in terms of what the payment is, you know, the interest rate, I mean, if you want to make it 2%, it could be 2%. If you're going to make it 11%, it could be 11, but your payment's still going to be $2,500, let's say, yeah. Right? What's changing is then the purchase price. Now, you know, we tend to keep them just kind of like what market is, 4%, 5%, 6%. You know, I guess you possibly could play some games if you wanted to make it super high, right? And then you'd have more interest deduction, but then your seller would have more interest income, which is more taxable. And so generally market rate is usually what we settle on there. So that would be my one of my first recommendations that we've learned is keep it simple: down payment, monthly payment, number of months, and awesome. Backing it from there. And then once you get into it, right, then you have other factors, right? Are you going to have a prepayment penalty, right? Because one strategy, if you have a higher interest rate, right? So if we, let's say we negotiate this thing and it's at 6%, and then after 3 years, let's say it's a 6 year term. And after 3 years, maybe we can go to a bank, right? And then we could wrap up a bunch of these seller notes and we can get them at 4% and we could pay them all off. And, you know, it's a question of, hey, do we want to do that? But we could, right? But if you're having prepayment penalties in there, you have to take that into as a factor. We've looked at balloon payments on some, right, where maybe we're paying less money down now, but then in 5 years we got this big balloon payment that we got to handle, which once again we can try to get the seller to continue to do it, or you know, maybe he is willing to you know, or he has to get paid, and we got to, you know, be prepared to go to a bank and get that. So you know, everything is negotiable. It really depends on kind of what your goals are, what their goals are. And for a lot of these people, it's retirement, right? At least the ones we bought. And so it's that consistent cash flow. It's security. It's, you know, because the last thing they want to do is take the business back after they sold it to you, right? Yep. Yes, that's key.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Are there some sample deals that you want to share also from a negotiation standpoint?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do one. I got two I'll do. So one, seller financing one, you know, this is the one that the business made no money. So it was, doing $0 in cash flow to the seller. And so we bought it for, $125,000, which was, you know, the other part of this is, you know, what's assets and what's goodwill, without getting too much into tax code. If it's assets, you can usually right now bonus depreciate, deduct almost all of it in your first year. If it's goodwill, it has to be amortized over a number of years, right? So it's in our benefit as the buyer to want to make as much assets as we can, inventory and fixtures, and it's best for the seller to be all goodwill. So somewhere in the middle, right?
Yep.
So anyway, we bought this 25, we put 25% down. So we put, you know, I don't know, I think we put $25,000 down. So we had a loan of $100,000. It was 6%, 4 years, $2,300 a month. And so $25,000 down and $2,300 a month. And so first year we increased the sales by 20%, cash flowed about $100,000. And so for that one, you know, we got, you know, I don't know if you look at cash on cash return, we got almost 400%, right? Because that $100,000 nice. covered all the debt payments. And so, you know, from a, if you think about other investments you can make, right? In terms of you put $25,000 down and then for X amount of years, it can generate $100,000 of income. You know, that's a great return. Now, obviously, you know, it takes work. You got to hire the right people. Like this is not passive at all. But when we looking at, you know, where do we put our capital, right? 400% return is kind of the best way you can go. And as this added bonus for that year, we bought it in December, like December 15th or something. And so, of that deal, 100,000 of it, of that 125 was in that inventory and assets fixtures. And so we were able to depreciate $100,000 paper loss in 15 days and, you know, saved us $30,000 in taxes. And so that was a good one. Another one I have, this is a business that was doing over $1 million a year in sales. So cash flowing about $100,000. And so we bought that for $350,000 and it was about three times or so cash flow. That one, we put $50,000 down, about 15%. You know, usually we're in that 15 to 25 range. Yep. Seller financing does not mean no money down, but it means, you know, more flexible terms. And so then we had a loan of $300,000, and I think we have about a $3,000 a month payment on that one. But that one, we increased the sales by 70% the first year, took it from $1 million to 1.7. That thing cash flows like, you know, 400 a year. And so that was one of our best 8x our money in the first year one. And so, but that's the one that has, I've got this $150,000 balloon payment in like 2 years. And so we got to prepare for that. But, anyway, same tax depreciation benefits as all these others. And so that's a good one. And then the one I just finished was a group of stores, over $1 million, similar 20% down. And, you know, I think it's like 10,000 a month is our payment. And so we had to get that one rolling. But, anyway, so like I said, it can scale from 100 business that does 100,000 a year to one that's doing, you know, $5.5 million a year in sales, and, you know, all without a bank involved.
Fantastic stuff. And, you know, one of the points that I've always made on this show is for business owners, where could they get the best return ever? It's in their own business and knowing what they're doing inside of their own business. And this is a great example of exactly that. We're trying to find those returns in any other places, right? But
yeah, you can't do it.
No, you're in your zone of genius. You know exactly what you're doing. And you have a skill set, and therefore the capital that you deploy in that zone of genius, there's just no return that you're going to generate anywhere else like that. Now, one habit I've observed from wealthy and successful people is that they're always studying. They're always learning new things. What are you currently studying and learning?
Oh, man. Yeah, every day. I would say time management is a big one, you know, with you know, all this stuff going on. I got, you know, obviously the new businesses, you know, my family, you know, my podcast, right? It's how do I effectively manage my time and what do I focus on? I think that's the biggest challenge a lot of us face, is there's so many things that we could do in a day, and it's getting very good clarity on, you know, what's the best use of my time. And so I've learned a lot of the ways to identify, you know, what's the highest value task for me, right? While I could do all these low value tasks, you know, I want to invest my time in the things that only I can do that produce the highest dollar amount, you know, kind of per hour. And so for me, you know, in the company, I'm the visionary, right? So I come up with the ideas, you know, I create the relationships with other people, you know, I'm trying to think a couple steps ahead. And so that's really where I spend and try to focus a lot of my time is and learn strategies, right? There's like time chunking, or time blocking, when which you say, okay, I'm going to spend a certain amount of time, I don't know, Tuesdays mornings, you know, I'm not going to answer any email. All I'm going to do is focus on our 5-year plan, or, you know, whatever it is. On Wednesdays in the afternoon, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take calls. I'm going to schedule meetings. And so you block off this time so that you're not like stuck in this whirlwind, because otherwise, you know, so much comes at you, right? All these different people, you know, Slack messages, text messages, voice calls. Everyone wants to meet because it's not COVID anymore. All these people want to meet with us. And it's like, hey, what do you want to meet about? Can we just do it over Zoom? Like, I don't want to like rearrange my whole day just to meet. And so we're, you know, so it's getting better at saying no, right? So you set these rules that says, this is how I'm going to operate my schedule. And you set rules and you don't let other people kind of control your schedule. And then for us, it's kind of having these big goals, right? So I have these big goals. You know, I believe in abundance, and that, you know, as big as I can believe that we can create this vision and that we can achieve it. And if I can inspire other people on our team and make them see the vision that I see that we can achieve it. And so, you know, I'm big on goal setting, having very good clarity on what that 3-year goal is and, you know, why do we want it? So what it is, why do we want it? You know, kind of what's the way, how are we going to do it? And then who can help me? Because at the end of the day, you know, I'm a big believer in that the who, not how is a great book to read.
Yep.
And, you know, I think summarized a lot of different concepts, but it, you know, even for us, it was always, you know, how could I do it? Which is the wrong question to ask. And which are they talking about the book, which is who can help me do it is the right question. And so I'm learning that every day. I continue to stop myself when I say I need to do this. I try to stop and say, okay, who can help me do this? And so, yeah, that's what I'm constantly learning now and continue to try to improve is how do I manage my time? How do I decide what to focus on? Or I know what I want to focus on. It's the highest value tasks. It's a question of how do you determine what is your superpower and what are those tasks? And then everything else, delegate, delete, delay, you know, whatever the strategy is.
Yep, absolutely. Now, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on money to future generations and we're only allowed to pass on 3 principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Yep. So the first one is to think big in that the world is abundant and then anything you ask for with good habits and discipline, you can achieve. And I think a big problem for a lot of people is they think small, they have limiting beliefs and they don't even know that. Like even I, for a while, thought that we only could have success in Philadelphia because we're physically here. We physically go to the stores, right? And that, you know, that was a limiting belief I had. And I didn't even know it until we realized that, hey, we want to operate stores and are in these new markets or around the country. And that, you know, hey, we can build this thing as big as we can, as long as we can set up systems and process and hire the right people. And that, you know, it's as big as we want it to be. And so it's a hard one. People don't know they have limiting beliefs until they work with somebody who can start asking them questions, who can challenge them on things. And so, thinking big is great. There's a good book called What It Takes by Steve Schwarzman, who, you know, talks about it takes the same amount of energy, time, and effort to do something small as it does to take something, do something large, you know, buying a house, buying a business, even this, you know, big deal we just did is the same exact amount of work as a tiny deal that we do. And so, yep. You know, go big and you get better results. So think big, act big. That's a good one for me. Number two, I think is on all the other investments to keep it simple. You know, I think I've learned over the years, you see all these other people doing all this stuff and I've, you know, shiny object, you chase it, right? And that rather than me half trying to get into, I don't know, crypto and learn all these strategies and stuff. And then I spend a little bit of time and then I put some money, but I don't actually know what I'm doing versus just kind of keeping it simple. Say, all right, I'm going to do dollar cost averaging into, you know, in low cost index funds. I'm going to do dollar cost averaging into, I don't know, Swan, Bitcoin, or, you know, whatever, or passively invest with some great operators. Just keeping it simple and focusing kind of on, at least for us, focus on what we're really good at. You know, for us, it's operating businesses, and then we'll let other people, you know, focus on what they're really good at through passive investing or just through, like I said, Vanguard, low cost index fund, dollar cost indexing. And then finally, it's surrounding yourself with good people who are smarter than you. You know, this concept that you're the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with, I think is critical. And, you know, if you're always think you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And so that would be my third one.
Awesome stuff. This has been fantastic, Brian, having you on. Where can my audience and my viewers and my listeners learn more about you? Where can they follow you and where can they stay informed of all the many things that you're involved with?
Sure. Yeah, great. So a few things. I have a podcast called Business with Beers. My last name, Brian Beers, like the drink, multiple of them. And so, you know, Spotify, Apple, whatever, Business with Beers, Instagram at Business with Beers or Facebook, same thing. And brianbeers.com, just because it has a link to all that stuff. And I have a newsletter I'm working on with some seller financing deals and just, you know, goal setting and a couple of these things. So they can check out that and subscribe for free. So
awesome. Well, this has been a blast, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for all of my listeners and viewers.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for having me.
Awesome. And thank you for you, the listener and the viewer, spending most valuable resource, your time once again with me on the show. All and everything that you need to know about our community is at cashflowninja.com, cashflowninja.com. Until next time, live infinitely.
This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.